Rappin' with Reef Bum is sponsored by Champion Lighting and Supply, Polo Reef, and Fauna Marine.
Hey, what's happening, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Rappin' with Reef Bum. I'm your host, Keith Berkelhammer. So on today's live stream, I welcome Phil Gilbert from Polyp Lab. Phil is the CEO of Polyp Lab. What's going on there, Phil?
Hey, everything's great. I'm happy to be on your show. Thank you for inviting me. And I'm ready for this interview and podcast, and I'll be very happy to talk with you and answer all the questions that you have in your mind.
I feel fortunate because you don't do a lot of these, and so it's a very special opportunity, I think, to ask a lot of questions. So, folks, if you've got questions for Phil, comments, just drop them in the live chat, and we will do our best to get to them all. But before I start chatting with Phil, I want to thank the sponsors of this particular live stream. And my sponsors are really important because they make this show possible, which is, you know, with their support, and that means a lot to me. So I want to continue to bring on awesome guests to help foster a learning environment on the show. Polo Reef, make sure to check out Polo Reef's new YouTube video that drops this Friday, where the infamous Purple Queen Antheus is the star of the show. I can never keep those things alive. Those are tough fish to keep alive. This incredibly difficult species is hardly seen in aquaria because they usually die quickly. There you go. Polar Reef tackles a proper quarantine process and is finally successful. Whoa. Make sure to subscribe to the YouTube channel at Polar Reef for video drop notifications. Champion Lighting and Supply. Besides being a place for hobbyists to purchase saltwater aquarium supplies online, Champion Lighting is also a wholesale distributor for many popular brands. If you own an aquarium store or an aquarium service company, contact Champion Lighting through their website at championlighting.com to set up a wholesale account. And finally, Fauna Marine. I do use the Fauna Marine Reef ICP Total Test Kit, which gives a quick, accurate, and easy overview of over 90 water values in reef aquariums, from macro elements to trace elements and pollutants. You get a complete overview with corresponding dosage and action recommendations. So, Phil, before we get into our conversation, I do want to send out our best wishes and prayers for the folks in the path of this horrific Hurricane Milton, which is expected to make landfall, I think, Thursday morning, late Wednesday evening, on the Florida Gulf Coast in the Tampa region. Chris and Amanda Meckley and their family are in that area, so a special shout out to them. Our thoughts and prayers are with you guys, so let's keep our fingers crossed that they and the animals on their coral farm will be safe and get through this frickin' nasty, nasty storm. It's hopefully it's gonna miss. Hopefully it's gonna.
Everybody stay safe out there, and it's huge. So hopefully everybody's gonna be not gonna be too much hurt by this terrible event.
Yeah, hopefully it just peters out and bounces off the coast, and everybody will be safe. But yeah, to everybody, all the reef keeping brothers and sisters out there in that area, stay safe, and we'll keep our fingers crossed for you. So yep. So Sturgis Reef is going to be very bad for everyone in that area. Yeah. Oh, we already got some product questions there, Phil. John Wright, that's on the agenda in terms of he's asking already about Polyp Lab Booster. So yeah. We'll talk about that. But I want to give you an opportunity, Phil, though, to kind of give us a quick overview of how you got into the whole reef keeping hobby and business. What was your journey like, man?
Well, I'm a teacher by trade, so I have my degrees in physical education teaching. As a gym teacher, we could say that. I did that for 7 years before dropping everything and keep working with my first company, my first distribution company, which was the Xenia North America. I got into this business back in the year 2001, dealing with Giesman product.
Giesman
lightning product.
I use their lights, their metal halides.
Yeah, and basically where I started with Axel, the owner at that time, who gave me my first bunch of products and try out the North American market from Montreal, and we did well, and I started like this, as being a teacher by trade. I also been selling pharmaceutical product for working for a company called Bristol Myers Squibb.
Yeah.
Back in the day, so I had a little background of everything's related with sales and logistics and whatnot. Later on, I dropped everything from teaching to focus on Xenia, and I started to distribute Polyplat product. And at that time, we had Refroid, not many SKUs. Refroid, Medic, we had the one. And the refresh kit, which was Fuel, Acid, Genesis, and Plus. And we did that as an exclusive distributor worldwide for about 2 years before buying the company. So we actually bought everything, me and my partner, Patrick, which I say hi tonight. And we bought Polyplab together and then started in 2010, end of 2010, beginning 2011. We started this journey with Polyplab, which today is the company it is because of the work we both did. And that's mainly how I got into it. I was always interested in the ocean or tropical environment, so to speak. I did some scuba diving before. I have my class and permits. And I did had an aquarium at home, several aquariums up to the moment where we bought our own buildings, and then our aquariums are all mm-hmm. in the building.
Yeah, cool.
In a warehouse building. So that's basically is my journey up to now. And hopefully it's going to last for another 10, 15 years of me being there, and Polyplab will go on over forever.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I mean, there's a lot of, different ways that people have kind of gotten into this hobby and into this business, and that's a very unique way to do it. I mean, you got into it business purposes, but then kind of like got all absorbed in what it's all about.
It's crazy because there's more to this story, because I met my first wife was German, and I traveled to Germany for 2 years seeing her. She was coming back and whatnot. And Axel was around as one friend of the family, right? And he was talking about his business, and I couldn't imagine that that people were having at home those corals and actually being able to keep them. And that fascinated me, all the conjecture that you need to get in regard to flow, lights, protein skimmer, water quality, and all these things you need to control in order to get a result that's decent is just amazing. And that really got me on, and the beauty of the corals and the way they are is actually mesmerizing for me.
So so you didn't really have, did you like kind of follow any particular reef keepers, you know, when you got into the business? Did anybody kind of stand out to you in terms of like, oh, wow, that's somebody that really...
Oh yeah, sure. I mean, I learned so much with Axel first on the light part of it. It's actually wonderful. To name a few, which I still work with today, David Saxby, is instrumental in all of this. Stuart Bertram, also a partner in D&D, was absolutely a source of knowledge that. That's almost endless. Roger Vitko from Tanzi, Mr. Axel Tanzi from Tanzi. All these guys in their own very specific ways got me into this hobby to understand all those different types of meaning and systems. And of course, when we started selling Polyplab, David at that time, which had Polyplab as the owner, was getting into some kind of a concept with external feeding for corals and ways to keep corals in a better position or to be in a better health and to keep them growing faster and more healthier with external feeding. And even though it's a concept that exists from way a long time ago, people knew about it. I don't think that anybody really put it the pedal on the gas until we started with PolypLab and really started to push it as something that is as very important for keeping corals and different type of corals in an aquarium today.
Yeah, for those folks that don't know, David Saxby has probably one of the most famous aquariums in the world, and I had him on the show a couple of years ago, and it's just mind-boggling to me in terms of, I can't recall off the top of my head how big of that tank is, but I do recall that he said that the filtration runs underneath the street.
The filtration is on the other side of the street, and the pipe goes under the street. He's just in front of Hyde Park, London, in the UK. It's just amazing. You can't believe it. But David is a character. It's one of the great reef keeper I have known in my life. So yeah, pretty crazy.
So Phil, for those folks that are not familiar with PolypLab, can you kind of just give us a rundown of what the company is all about and the main products in your line? I mean, everybody kind of knows you guys for Reefroids.
For us, PolypLab, we really it went off flying with Reefroid, which at that time was the main product, which is still the main product of our line. And as far as reference concern this product just showed the industry, that the way we market it and the way the performance of the product was, it showed that we actually need external feeding for corals if we want to keep them happy and if we want to have them growing faster or have a better growth rate. It's not for everybody, in the sense where there's people that want to have a display tank and other farms which we work a lot that needs the product to grow their corals to a place where they can be commercially available. But Reefroid is the main product we have as aimed at corals, initially for gorgonians and very specific types of corals. But over the years, realizing that any corals with a mouth or any corals with apparatus will feed on external food to help them going over their environment. The polyp booster, which is the feeding trigger for corals to just, and animals in the tank to signal that there is something, there's food coming, and that preps them for getting additional food or more efficient at collecting food, which they have in their environment, because coral can eat with their mouth. They have tentacles. They have this mucus system where they can capture the food and bring it to their mouth. They have different ways of capturing with fins. So when Polyp Booster comes in the tank, it gives the corals and the animal a chance to get themselves prepped up for this food that's going to go in the water column to be captured and then ingested. Medic was one of the product we have there that sells around the world for helping manage hic issues. We have one. We have of course Plus. We have Genesis, which now is more sold out of the refresh kit as a bacterial products to start up tanks or just to create a colony of bacteria that's going to keep your nitrate down and some nutrients in the tank. Colors 200% to increase coloration, pure mix of amino acids, carbon, activated carbon of high grade carbon. We have also Ordip, the primer, the reef primer,
yep,
which got a lot of more traction in the past month and years, with more and more and more farms and more people in the industries and in the laboratories who use primer to dip their coral, as it's softer on coral in regard of the response or the stress response, do the job, and is easy to use. So that would be mainly. We have some other products, you know, the lens, which was very commercially popular. We had Turkey, those new syringe that's coming out, the Genesis Rock ceramic filtration system for colony growth. All of these products now are part of the Polyp Lab portfolio, and it's all aimed at getting your corals to grow faster, get better coloration, and be healthier.
Yeah, I definitely want to dive deeper into some of those. One comment from Rich Colombo says, you guys should make a Reef Roids Light for those who want less phosphate. Is there a lot of phosphate in the Reef Roids? Or is that a misnomer?
That's the thing. Well, the thing is, with any type of food, phosphate exists. If there's a company selling a food or products that's supposed to enhance growth, and they claim there's no phosphate, I'm on the opinion that it's not a food. It can be something else, whatever they can call it with interaction with anything. But phosphate is naturally present in food that is high grade food. I mean proteins and whatnot. So the thing is, most of the problems that arise with Reef Roids is the following: is customers or people will use too much of it to get those reactions, and then they don't get the benefits out of it. What's great is that with a 75 gram bag, you can go for twice a week and not use it anymore and have a perfect result in growth and coloration, while other products, you can have to feed them each and every day and you don't get any phosphate because you get no results, or you get no phosphate because you don't have anything potent. So you have the choice of feeding more of something that have less potency, or feed less and have more for your money with something that actually has something to get.
So we're not going to be seeing a Reef Roids Light, because that's going to be not a high quality food is what you're saying there, and phosphate wouldn't be a part of it.
That's exactly what I'm saying. And the thing is that there's no, it's not like sugar, right? It's not like you're going to have a diet. If you have a diet coach because you don't want to get fat, well, you want Carl to be fat and healthy. So you got to have something to give them. So it's an argument that's been around for years, and saying that Reef Roids brings phosphate up and whatnot. But the fact is, just use less in your tank. You're going to have more for your money, and you can use your Reef Roid back for a longer period instead of buying a product twice that has going to have a mitigated result.
Rich does say, true, definitely feed it less often, but love it. Great product. I use it. So I make this homemade fish and coral food, and I'll put a... I don't know if I'm putting enough in there. I put in a tablespoon into a big mixing bowl, and I put the stuff I get from the supermarket, like some scallops, some shrimp, some salmon, and I'll put a big fat tablespoon of Reef Roids in there, and I'll put some other stuff into this concoction. So I'm feeding it every day. Is that one, tablespoon enough for that? I don't know. My corals seem to be pretty happy with my homemade, food with that ingredient.
It all has to do with your tank size. What tank size do you have?
Yeah, both of my systems are around 350 gallons.
Yeah, so it's big. So I mean, of course, you need to put an amount that is acceptable, but. It comes to the same point of what we're just saying is, if you use Reef Roid into a nano tank of 9 or 10 or 12 gallon and you're putting it each and every day, of course you're going to have something that's going to get a problem with your water quality. But if you're feeding a 300, twice a 700 gallon volumes of water each and every day with a teaspoon or a tablespoon of Reef Roid into your mixture, you're just going to have the result that you want to have. And We generally recommend to put one tablespoon per 50 gallon of one quarter of a sorry hey my mistake guys sorry it's one it's a quarter tablespoon for every 50 gallons of water volume, and that to start with twice a week. And I mean, somebody that comes and tells us, well, I use your product, my phosphate went to the roof or whatnot. It's kind of, well, you just made a test for the last 6 months, and today you just realize your phosphate is high. You need to manage your tank. You need a nice boundary practice. And it's not like you're getting into a situation where it's getting complicated to feed your coral. It's just a situation where you need to have a routine where you're going to cost you money. That's going to be less money possible for the results you want to get. you want, you can buy something else with less phosphate, but you're just going to buy it more often.
I don't know, man. Maybe I should go 2 tablespoons there and kind of goose it up a little bit there and see what happens. I don't know.
You know? Yeah. You have CLOTE. I mean, you have, CLOTE, phenomenal ICP test. Just do it and just look at the result and we can discuss it.
I have perpetually low phosphates. You know, that's something that's always a problem. So what better way to kind of like goose them up a little bit than, feed more, right?
It's like Mr. Colombo just said, just put more refroid, then you don't have to add any kind of artificial phosphate.
Yeah, I know.
Dosing phosphate. Come on.
I do dose phosphate and nitrate. So that would be nice to have less to dose. Alyssa, best carbon polyp lab triple exclamation point had an opportunity to meet Phil in Cali Wrap.
Three or four weeks ago. So pretty sure that I don't remember everybody, guys, but, memory loss. But, pretty sure that I would remember that discussion.
JJ's Fish Channel. I visited a guy one day, and he had refroids mixed with liquid. I wonder what kind of liquid on a beaker with a stirrer and is being dosed over time with a doser. Does it spoil or go bad? I don't know. Does it have a shelf life?
It doesn't have the product itself doesn't have a shelf life, so to speak, as a powder. It's an 8% humidity content in refroid, which is way too low for anything to be able to grow inside unless it gets in the humidity. If you put it in a doser, the thing is, you can run the doser for probably three days, depending on the liquid in which you're going to put the product. If you put the product, or if you dose a product with your polyp booster, for instance, you mix it with your polyp booster, which has a pH of less than 4, there's not going to be any kind of bacteria that's going to grow into it as long as there's no salt water getting into it or as long as it's not exposed to air. So it's possible to do it. Osmosis water is going to give you a bigger break to keep your mixture long enough. Of course, if it's cold, it's going to be long enough. But at one point, dosing it for more than 4 days, 5 days, I would recommend to have it replenished.
JJ's Fish Channel, just put it in your food and freeze it. They'll have a long, long shelf life. There you go, right? That's what I do.
Of course. That would be perfect. I mean, Jake Adams was actually, there's actually a video that he made back in the days where he's doing this food concoction and put it in the freezer and he use it in each and every day. That's one of the way to do it.
Rich Colombo, you're beating me to the question. Can you tell us more about Polyp Booster? I've never tried it. I was curious about, you mentioned it, Phil. It's supposed to trigger quickly trigger a feeding response. Is that something? Well, tell us about the product and we'll dig into a little bit more.
Polyp Booster is a feeding trigger response for animal in the water, all animals, shrimp, fish, the copepods, the copepods, the corals, anemone, anything you have living in your aquariums, except phytoplankton or plants or algae, they're not going to be triggered by this. But it was basically made for this purposes. We wanted to have a product that we would be able to put into the water and increase the efficiency of refroid or any coral foods for that instance, because it's going to prep the corals and the animals to get food. It's an 18 amino acid mix coupled with a 14 fatty acid mix into a solution, into an oily solution, into a fat solution, a base solution that's going to create this broad spectrums of amino acids so everybody can benefit of it in the tank. We're pretty sure of what amino acids creates the feeding trigger response. But over the years, we realized that Polyp Booster would also be something that you can use in smaller tank if you don't want to use too much refroid and mess with the water, to put some Polyp Booster in it. And it's going to also be a product that's going to help to feed your coral as well, and your bacterial environment and your macrofauna or the microbiome, so we speak.
Is that a good product to use before you use Reefroids to kind of like get the corals ready to receive the Reefroids?
Absolutely. Absolutely. 10 to 5 to 10. The reaction is so fast. Can have a reaction under 30 seconds.
Wow.
But 10 to 15 minutes before you can use the product or into your routine. And that's going to be there's so many videos on Pollen Booster online that shows actually the reaction of the corals and the fact that they're changing their shape and their form thanks to the time lapse video that we introduced in our marketing strategy in 2011. It's crazy how those reactions also is part of our mesmerizing is a coral itself and the way it behaves. But that's what Pollen Booster will do.
What time of the day is the best time to feed? You know, a lot of corals have, especially SPS, have a lot of polyp extension when the lights are out, you know. But most people are not feeding their corals or fish when the lights are out. So what would you say, you know, given that fact, what would be the optimal time to be feeding?
The answer you gave it already, Keith. It's
I answer my own question.
Yeah, it's a fact. It's the fact is it's once your light are out or your photo periods and intensity gets lower and lower and lower, they're gonna be absolutely wonderful for them to feed at night. Because the second thing that happens at night and probably in many people's aquarium is that the flow is going to slow down. So that's going to give more time for the products to go around the water column and more chance for the corals to absorb it. It's either before the photo period is going to start, before your light starts, or before they end. It's the best, more optimal time of the day to do it. Now, that being said, you can do it anytime you want, because many people, we want to see that reaction. Yeah. We want to see that behavior. But if we're talking about fact here, you answered your own question. It's before dawn before sun's rise and just before it goes down. So the night is the best moment.
I guess if you put it on a doser, though, you can, feed it when the lights are out and that'll work. You know?
Absolutely. But it's not there's not going to be that much of a detrimental effect to do it when the lights are on. It's just going to be less optimal. That's for sure.
Question about Pollen Booster. Smoking Reefer is wondering if it's got a shelf life.
It doesn't have a shelf life because of the low pH. At 4 pH, you can keep that product on the shelf at that room temperature. You don't expose it to extreme heat. Frozen, it's not either a good idea when it's in the bottle, because the glass bottle is going to just explode, right? And as long as you don't put your doser, the one that comes with the bottle, into your water when you feed, because once you're going to put back this water back in, that might make a problem with bacteria, which love to feast inside of the dropper with low pH. Yeah. And a lot of nutrients. So there's the shelf life is actually not necessary to put in the fridge. You just have to make sure that it's tightly closed and that it's not in contact with salt water when you dose it.
Gotcha. Well, so, you know, a lot of people have different opinions about when they're feeding their tanks coral food and fish food. I guess, you know, specifically coral food. Turn off the skimmer, don't turn off the skimmer, turn off the return pumps. What are your thoughts on that, Phil? Does it make a big difference to turn off your pumps, skimmer?
There is a big difference to reduce the flow. You want the material that you're feeding to stay in the water column and go with the slower flow. If the flow is too great, you're going to have a part of the product that's going to go in the overflow at some point. Of course, you mix it before you put it. If you put Reefroid on the top of the water, it's going to all go to the overflow because it's so thin. It's so material is so small. So you need to mix it in. But once it's in the water column, you want to have all the animals or the corals especially to have the time to just capture all of this this food that's around them. So at high velocity or high flow, you're gonna have some of that food that may end up in the rock, and they're gonna make copepods happy or whatever critters you have in there. But the goal is to feed the corals initially. Then if it goes through your system or your filtration system, you can leave your skimmer on. It's not a problem. You can also feed with the difference when you use fish or seafood products to feed your corals is that for some corals, you're never going to get that stuff small enough. You're never going to get those particles small enough. And you have different choice with the corals itself when they feed, right? You can have a bigger particle size for them to eat, like coral pellets, which we think is too concentrated for them. They're going to take some of it, and they make great videos, but at one point they're going to reject it. They're going to go out of their mouths into a black substance. Maybe you've seen that before. And some corals don't it's not going to take all of these pellets. It's such a waste, yeah. Right? If you go with a product that has a small particle and it's all uniform, then you can be sure that all the type of coral will be able to grab them. Even large mouth polyps or corals going to be able to take it out because they're going to create a mucus to actually capture the food and bring it to their apparatus. Again, so many videos that shows these reaction. Pellets. We people just ask us, when are the pellets coming from Reefoid? When are we gonna get pellets? maybe I'm wrong. Customers tell me I might be wrong because when your product is optimal and is doing all the job, I'm not gonna get into funny or fussy stuff to get another product out that's going to maybe create the same reaction or give the same results, but sell more of something people don't need. I don't know. Maybe I made a mistake. And also, it's very difficult to make Reefoids into a pellet.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
That would.
I'm still trying to find it, but it's it's not that easy. It's, you know, there's a product, like any product, and then you have a binding material. This binding material for any kind of product is not the most nice product or nice stuff you want to get into a tank. But your goal is to find a binding product that's going to be beneficial for the corals in the tank and not become a problem.
Yeah.
And I haven't found it.
Well, you know, that's got to be a delicate balance, right, man? I mean, there's just a lot of different variables in play, and I'm sure there's a lot of R&D that goes into it, right?
Yeah, when we have time. When I have time, I guess, or we need to check it out. And it's not like everybody, all scientists are very, very busy these days to just keep those coral alive in the ocean. You know, hey, I need the food for corals in a tank. Yeah, I'll take care of the corals in the sea, right? Okay, I'll get back to you.
So you guys market Reefroids as like ideal for gonioporas, you know, zoas, mushrooms, and all the other filter feeding corals. But a lot of folks like me swear by it for SPS. Why do you think that's the case? And is there like another product in your product line that SPS Addex should think about as well?
I no, not really. Reefroid is such a perfect product, you know. It's and it gets to a point where SPS, LPS, all types of coral will benefit from it, except of course corals that doesn't feed externally. You know, there are those NPOS tanks, right? The tanks of those corals that are purely carnivores. You wasn't able to keep those corals in a tank before. It was almost like impossible to. Not available for any kind of guys or hobbyists. And that's what Reefroid changed along with other products. I mean, Julian Sprong is somebody I could have named as a great influence on me for learning about coral. I named it early on. Jake Adams, wow, there's no knowledge of these people and these guys and around this. Sanjay Yoshi, Mike Paletta. Okay, I'm going to stop. I'm going to go all over the place. Dana Riddle. My God. I mean, so many people I know in this industry that put us, that motivated me. But as long as Reef Raid's going, we might change your instruction to put all corals and all LPS, SPS and whatnot. We even hard corals, which were renowned not to be taking external Scarlatinian corals, external alimentation, do well with Reef Raid. And up to now, I think we're the only one with Reef Chelly who were part of a research in Australia that showed the efficiency of Reef Raid growing corals. On a paper. I mean, we have this research and it's available since 2011 at Forsman and Co. And they actually showed that Reef Raid is in the commercial, the most effective is seawater, by the way. It's not Reef Raid.
Yeah, that naturally, makes sense.
It's always the best. But Reef Raid comes as a commercial feed as the one that's top in growing corals in a lab environment.
So, all right, a couple of product questions, and I apologize because I have no idea how to pronounce this user's name. It's a foreign language. But this person would like to ask you more about the PolypLab Medic.
PolypLab Medic is it's a product to manage ick. Hick is we consider hick as being in everyone's tank. Okay, we take it for granted. There's and you know, you can't not have a tank that has no ick inside. When you create a situation of stress, when you add new fish, when some powers goes off, something arise, ick appears. First step, make sure that the stress situation is resolved. Second step, use Medic. Use a product that's going to help you manage your situation and that's going to help you to control the counts of those hick, especially the larva stage, the trophon, that are in the water column. You want to reduce that count so they don't grab on your fish, feed on them, and reproduce, and then the cycle goes on until your fish die because they can't fight the infection or the outbreak. That's what Medic's help into. Medic's going to help you manage your issue, and from a period of time, from 10 to 20 days, will give a chance to your fish to actually survive the outbreak by getting it harder for the ick to actually do its life cycle. That's what Medic is all about. The first thing or the first objection people had with Medic was, hey, it's reef safe. If it's reef safe, it's not going to do anything. Well, we don't agree, right? Being reef safe means that it's not that it's going to be an optimal condition for your corals into your aquarium, but it's not going to kill it. It's going to make your anemone go crazy. They don't like
ammonia.
Anemone. Anemone?
Oh.
Pink tips, anemone. I don't know.
Anemones.
Maybe it's
anemones, yeah.
Anemones,
yeah,
yes. Yeah. They're not going to like it. Corals not going to like it. Fish, they don't really care, right? You're just getting, you're conditioning your water to be in a position where it's going to be hard for the hick to do its life cycle. That's all you're doing. And then it's up to the customers and up to the husbandry skill of somebody to just recognize what the stress is. If you get a cold and you're still in the snow and in the evening with bare foot, you're going to still have a cold, right? It's not because the cold is going to give you the problem. It's just that your body's not going to be able to fight the problems you have right now in your body. That's a little bit the philosophy we have with Medic. If you see this thing, and I could have had a third very important point with Medic, with Hick. If you see it, if you can see it, it's because there's already a lot working on, right? Yeah. So you have to act right away. Sometimes if you wait too long, if you check it out, it's going to go away. And then you go after 2 to 3 days, and oh, one of the fish is full of it. And then you say, miracle product, Medic. And you go, it might be a problem. You might have to do double steps to get into it and be deceived at the end result because the problem was too much time between the time between the moment where you realize there was an issue and too much time between the moment you realize what was the outbreak issue. Why did it start? So that's what I would say with Medic. Absolutely. You should always have one into your cabinet.
Just in case.
Just in case.
Let's talk about another. This is not a medication, but this is something to kill. You already mentioned it, reef primer. You know,
yeah.
So that's give us a down low on that in terms of the best uses. And I mean, I know people use it for dips and what have you for corals.
Reef primer is actually a coral dip, and it's going to help you do what all other coral dips doing, and that there's many existing already. They're going to do, we're mainly 90% doing the same thing. The objective is the same. One big difference with our product is that most of them are very harsh on coral. They're going to stress it.
Right.
You're going to have a stress reaction. They're going to probably retract, and they're going to eject some mucus. And it's going to be, it's not going to be fun for them. Whatever we think about if corals have fun or not, they're not going to be well, right? Primer will be gentle. It's strange to say, but will be gentle on your corals. They're not going to create the stress response. Okay. It's going to make an environment where it's going to be very bad for what you don't want to have on your coral, but it's going to make your coral more inclined to resist treatment, right? Even for humans, sometimes the sickness is the issue, the illness is the issue, but the treatment might be a killer too,
right? You're building
might
up resistance.
Yes, exactly. So using primer is going to keep your coral very, 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 very gentle, or the direction will be very gentle. And what's good with the primer is that it's going to leave a coat on it when you remove it from the water, from the dip water. You can put it right back into your aquarium to keep a little barrier to protect them from bacteria for maybe a half an hour, an hour, when you put it back into the tank. So you don't have to rinse them. Of course, never use primer into an aquarium. It's going to be very, very problematic for your fish, but it's well explained into your instruction. But that's amazing. That's mainly what primer is. It's going to take care of stuff. You don't want a hitchhiker on your coral you don't want. You're going to still have to watch for your eggs, because eggs, it's a very, very difficult. I don't know of any products that can kill them yet.
No, that's a nut that has not been cracked in terms of.
Yeah, no, exactly. And then it's well done. Nature is well done. So, but at the end of the day, primer is going to help you keep your collection safe and the ones that you already have in your distinct tank more safe. So, we have farms that dip their coral initially before shipping, right? Or do a treatment already. You can do another one at home once they come in, and it's still going to be okay. You're not going to be having your coral to be in a very bad position when you use primer for your needs and getting them clean.
So a place that's shipping corals can dip a coral right before it goes into the bag, and it'll ship fine. It's not going to get too stressed out.
No, absolutely, and we have those company. We have many farms and company that sells live corals that actually dip their coral into a solution. I don't know if it's right before shipping, but they do dip their coral to go into a shipping probably table or shipping raceway.
Yep.
For them to be ready to ship. That's probably a better way to explain it.
Have you guys ever thought about trying to develop some sort of in-tank treatment for aquarium flatworms? I mean, companies have tried, but there is really nothing out there that is successful that I know Polo Reef is working on some research to try to figure out a way to do an in-tank treatment. That's a tough one, man.
There's two problems with flatworm, and I can name the product. Maybe it's not a sponsor, but I mean, everybody knows Flatworm Exit, right? And I think, if I'm not wrong, that all other flatworm products that exist is probably based on the same concept, not to say the same chemicals or whatnot. But again, it's a way to manage it, because I talk by experience, because I had a 90 gallons, which I almost killed everything because I didn't siphon enough of the flatworms before using a flatworm exit product. So these animals release a toxin that's going to actually kill more than themselves over time if you don't manage your problems properly. But if I could find a product that would get rid of flatworms and the toxins, I'd probably not be rich because it's a small
You'd be toxin. Retiring pretty soon after.
Yeah, I would probably be very popular in this industry. But the main issue is that flatworm can be taken care of by many products in the tank. You just can't neutralize the toxin at the same time.
The other tough thing is there's a lot of variations of flatworms. Yeah. So there's different flatworms out there, and some of them are tougher than others.
Exact. So it's not only by changing the concentration of something and some product. And even today, people just take pictures of their corals and they go, "Hey, what's that?" Even very popular influencers and people on Instagram or Facebook, they say, "Hey, look what we found out this. Everybody's seen that before, and we know nothing." Sorry, guys.
There's a lot of stuff out there.
Yeah, we don't know much, but we keep going, and we keep trying to get as much information we can. But exactly, I think the variation of the type of animals you're dealing with is a problem too.
I had one. Did I have one guest on, or was talk? It might have been a side conversation, but I heard now that there's some black acro-eating flatworms. I was like, what?
Well, isn't it Sanjay? Isn't it Sanjay or
it might have been Joe Muscat, who I had on last week.
Oh, Joe, yes. It could be. But yeah, black eating flatworm.
It's like, man, that's scary. I mean, that's like the devil. I mean, black acro-eating flatworms.
Why are they there? That's something else. And then you have to develop a product that's going to take care of it without even knowing what the hell is it. It is. So yeah, it's a tough hobby. But it's a fun one.
yeah, Rich Colombo says fenbendazole. Keith, I'm just not brave enough to put it in my tank. And then Reefkeeper says, yeah, he uses it for colonial hydroids on two occasions. Lost no fish or corals during both treatments. Yeah, you know, I mean, there's some cutting edge stuff that that's a whole thing, right? With Reefkeepers, man, we're always trying to like experiment and push the envelope a little bit there and go over that edge. Sometimes it works and rewarding, but sometimes it doesn't.
You never know if it's going to work on a longer period of time. It's not like when you're selling craft dinner, you have the receipt, you know what it's going to do, and you know when you're going to eat it, it's going to be very good, but very bad for you. But in other terms is when you have those use of antibiotic, fluconazole is very popular as well. Yeah. There's a lot of different antibiotics that can be used. And the trade itself, A, it's not available for everyone in every country, right? B, it can bring up any kind of issues that you didn't expect it. You know, you can use those products that are very efficient, right? But they're so efficient and they're going to destroy your microbiome and your bacterial soup.
Not good.
And then you have to add bacterial products to restore it. You said it earlier on. It's a fine line. It's experience. It's a balance of a lot of things. But yeah, many things can work. And like Mr. Colombo said, there's many products you can be used, but maybe they're not reported enough. They're not documented enough for have a better understanding of how they work.
Melissa says about Reef Primer, best dip for SPS. That's all I use. Acro-eating flatworms. What about manta eating nudies? Does that take care of them? Yep.
Absolutely. Yeah. As a vertebrate, it's gonna be gone, and he's gonna make a nice show.
What about sea spiders?
Oh, good question. I can't confirm it's gonna take care of it. I can't confirm it. I mean, we worked in close collaboration with the California Science Academy, not to name it, Richard Dalbeck, and he used our product on many occasions with dips and with his coral, very efficient, very happy. But for those spiders, they're kind of their own. it's not as a I'm losing my English with my French, sorry. It's not an often situation. It's not happening often to have those spider in, but they're kind of a big problems when they show up. And the last information was that it was not as efficient on spiders with the experience with Richard. So I would say that that might be one issue that primers won't be able to take care of.
Let me ask you, Phil, let's talk about polyp extension. You know, we kind of talked about it before with the booster. And, you know, so for corals, you know, specifically SPS, many reef keepers have some fish in their tanks that can nip SPS, like certain angelfish can keep the, you know, those polyps on SPS closed up. And, you know, they'll certainly have an appetite, I think, for certain LPS. But let's, like, talk about SPS, you know, and you hear people say, like, well, you know, it's not that important to have polyp extension during the day. You know, there's polyp extension at night. Do you agree with that philosophy? Do you think, you know, I've had guests on here that say that if you have fish in the tank that are nipping the corals during the day, closing up polyps on SPS, that it is a it isn't a defense, you know, mode. It's in a stressful state. And that can't be good for the corals. What do you think about that?
I think that he's right in the fact that the polyp extension, some of the polyps that extend can be stinging polyps, right, for protection. They need to protect themselves from ever what they have around their environment. Is it because there's not enough resources in the aquariums and corals needs to defend themselves to keep the food from them as a polyp extension appears? I'm not sure that it's all corals that's going to extend polyps for defense at that time, where there's polyp extension for feeding, right? That's clear. That can be shown on a lot of videos or different places. There's also a question of sometimes their polyp extension. I mean, corals are at war on the reef all the time, right? What happens in aquariums themselves is you know, we're not going to change these things because we're better at keeping corals in the last 20 years. I mean, they've been around on Earth for probably millions of years, right? Doing what they do still today, which we haven't understand. So I don't agree with the fact that they would have polyp extension, which of course I get it. It's going to use energy. Energy is probably scarce in nature. I don't think it's the case into a closed circuit. Is it a reaction they have to actually mimic something they do for millions of years? Right, I'm sure about it. Are the resources more scarce in the ocean? I don't think so. Might be, might not be. But there's probably larger population while these days there's less and less. But in a closed circuit, in a closed environment, I don't think that the extension of those polyps is not good as their resources is there. And they're not going to spend energy and have a risk of bleach or to have damage from it. And actually, if it's for defense, they're going to do it at night and fight their neighbors to get as much space as they can or as much expansion space as they can. So it doesn't. It's kind of in an algebra equation. You're just putting the numbers on the other side and create a balance. I don't see where the energy is going to be lost in a closed circuit where it's going to be detrimental for the corals to feed them, other than maybe the fish trying to sting or to grab them and remove those polyps. But at the end of the day, they're probably going to feel uncomfortable doing this because it's a defense system or a feeding system.
Gotcha. Let's take a viewer question. And folks, feel free to drop your questions in the comments. Wonderwater, how many Genesis blocks do you recommend per gallons of fish size? Why don't you first, Phil, explain what those Genesis blocks are? I think you already made a reference to them earlier.
The Genesis rock is a media on which bacterial colonies can grow. And they can grow both with the new products that's coming in about a month. You're going to be able to use those ceramic block to create an environment for aerobic microbes who create the biofilms, or with their new system, anaerobic microfilms to develop and to take care of different, tackle different problems. Now, as far as the number of gallons that you need for a tank, I mean, we have those blocks. There's two blocks. They're going to be able to take care of aquariums between 50 and 200 gallons. It always depends on what your bioload is. If you have a 200 gallons with a couple corals there and there and a lot of live rock, a lot of rock, you might just need one, or you might not need rocks or ceramic rocks at all, right? If you have a big biofilm and that you experience problems with controlling nitrate and phosphate because you feed too much, or you put in too much food, or there's something with the water, you might need four of them, right, to create as much surface area to create that biofilm that's going to reduce your nitrate and your phosphate. If you have an aquarium with decoration into it, who says, you know, who talks about decoration, artificial decoration, talks about a lot of nitrates getting in there, right? Because it's all those little places where the bad stuff can hang out and create nitrate and phosphate. You might need more. So my recommendation is between 50 anyway, we sell our stuff in packs of two. So they have to buy two, right? But
There you go.
We don't sell them in singles, but between a 50 and 150 gallon tanks, two should be more than enough for all the kinds of needs you have, right? If you go over 150 gallons, then you have to make it to take in consideration the bioload and your levels also. I mean, again, the ICP tests are great, or tests are wonderful in this hobby to really pinpoint where you're at. With your values and take a decision that is appropriate for reducing nitrate and phosphate. If your nitrate is in the roof and you have problems with it, take four block, right? Add a bacterial product and create a situation where they're going to be able to remove nitrate. A lot of people go bare bottoms these days.
Yeah.
You're probably going to need double the rock, or triple the rock than what you would normally use.
You know what? Every reef tank is different. Every reef tank, even if they seem to be similar, they're different.
Absolutely. It's unique. It's a unique environment that someone creates for himself.
So you mentioned nitrates and phosphates a few times just there. And is there any particular nutrient levels that you think a reef should be kept at? Any certain ranges?
I've been in this industry for a long time. Remember, at the beginning, and I'm sure you know that as well, there were that trends with this phosphate inhibiting growth of hard corals. Okay, and there's products existing to reduce that. And then we go, oh, that's the way to do it. That's the way to go. And then you have other school of thought that say, hey, phosphates, we require phosphate. Even then, you know, we have to dose it these days. And nitrate, it doesn't matter if the water is with nitrate and phosphate and high level, you're going to have good results anyway, right? But we think that there should not be the problem with nitrate, phosphate, if it comes too high, we're talking about you really should keep it under 0.5, not even, you know, it's really, phosphate is more tricky. Nitrate, you can let it go, you know, but at one point, it's going to be so high, you have to shut down everything. Their problem's never going to go away.
Yeah.
So I'm in favor of having a water that, you know, this hobby is about keeping water most of the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you want to be in a position where you're going to have those nutrients available and available, I mean, in the bioavailability forms, even for either for bacteria, animals, corals. But you don't want to have it as so dirty that you have algae all over the place, and you have an outbreak each and every month that you have to tackle, and then it goes back to balance. I think that it's like everything. You just stay in the center of all of it. And as far as value goes, for one individual with a big bio load, he can be happy with high nitrates and high phosphate because it's always stay there. It's the fluctuation that's a problem. much more than just keeping a balance.
I always say too that you got to watch the corals, man. You got to look at the corals, and the corals are not happy, then that's maybe something. You know, I always notice when I have like get close to bottoming out on phosphates that my acros lose color. So yeah. That's a good indicator, you know.
You know, it's an observation. We love them; they look great, but that's part of it.
Do you have any thoughts in terms of an optimal range for calcium and alkalinity?
We do. Calcium and alkalinity is a good question, but I think we have one product, and I don't have the number in front of my face right now. I could go check, but one we recommend keeping calcium and alkalinity. You know, and that's another difficult thing to ask, because when you're doing it, when you have a good salt mix and you're doing your salt mix properly, you have those levels pretty much bang on, right? Water change and whatnot. We used to have this school of thought where you have higher magnesium level than usual. The problems with that is that when you have too much magnesium level, you're going to precipitate calcium. When you're going to have not enough calcium, you know, it's all of this is, again, a balance. I know that there's people that like to keep their alk high in some conditions, but I would think that for me, it's like playing with the devil. And again, you're going to play with the alkalinity, calcium, magnesium. And then you go, oh, I need to keep those numbers in check, but never check your pH, right? And then you, sorry to say, you F because your pH is going out of balance, and that's something else. So, whatever values you want to have in DKH, magnesium or alkalinity, make sure that the salt gives you the good result or the good values. Make your water change. Do your salt mix properly, check your pH, and be stable with those levels. Keep being stable. Acros is different. Art corals is different. You should have higher calcium, but it's not, it's again, it's the balance.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. All right. You mentioned pH, man. So elevated pH, you're going to get faster growth with corals. If somebody has more of a depressed pH, will that impact the you know, what people can get out of refroids? Do you think that's something that you can correlate directly with?
I could not correlate this with pH. What I could say, and what probably a lot of hobbyists know, is that if your pH is going lower, your skeleton building coral is going to have very bad problems to just build their skeleton, and that's what ocean acidification is. So pH should, you'd want to avoid as much swings in pH as possible. So you're going to have enormous swings in pH at night and at day. If you have systems that oxygenate your water, pH going to be swinging a little bit. But if you're always deprived in pH, refroid's not going to have any impact on the way it feeds, but the coral is not going to be able to grab what it needs to just build themselves and grow. That's as simple as that, but it's not going to have any effect on the refroid itself.
What about trace elements? So, you know, that can impact coral coloration, you know, if you don't have enough or too much for certain traces. And I would think it could impact, you know, again, in terms of if people are using refroids or some of your other products, that it could impact the benefits. But are there any particular trace elements? Have you guys done any research or have any thoughts? Do you have any thoughts, Phil, in terms of any particular trace elements that are more important than others, you know, for coral coloration and growth? You know, I know fluoride is a halogen. It's a key trace element. It's good for, you know, kind of building up resistance for, you know, parasites to corals and whatnot. Blues will pop more with SPS with you know, sufficient fluoride levels. You know, are there other trace elements that you think are key?
I know there is. I'm sure, and iodine is one of them that we think is a trace element that is essential for in aquariums, right? because it's going to help the pigmentation. So in regard to the way that they're going to react to light, coral is going to develop a pigmentation that can improve coloration. So iodine is one of those that I think is a trace element that's absolutely great and essential. I talked about it, magnesium. But magnesium, you can get it in salt. If you don't have a salt that has extra magnesium, you can add it on from time to time. It's also a great trace element you would probably need. Thinking about, fluoride, you talked about it. We talked about also, trace elements, they're very important to build those relations or with the biological reaction that happens in the coral, right? It's like amino acids. Amino acids are not beneficial as themselves. They need to enter into a reaction and a biological reaction to be efficient as a building block or whatever. There's fluoride and then fluorine. There's iron, but iron is for algae. It's not, you're not going to have anything beneficial, maybe for the zooanthellas, but those research still needs to be done, right? But iron, you want to keep out as much as you can from the tank itself. I don't see much more trace element that I would say that is required based on my experience, because using a good food source, a great salt, and some very high grade reagents for any kind of chemical things that you need is enough. Sometimes selling trace element is really like tuning in a Formula One car, right?
Yes.
You get those tests,
yeah.
And then they're going to tell you you're missing some trace element. And if they are very deprived, you probably should get those trace element in, right? But for some hobbyists, it's just a task that's unreachable, or they're not, I would say, like me, crazy enough.
It's more advanced reef keeping. I mean, when I was, for the majority of my reef keeping career, which is, God, it's got to be over 30 years, I didn't dose trace elements. I didn't really do a lot of ICP testing. I was just kind of like, all right, I'm testing for alkalinity, calcium, magnesium, and nitrate. I never tested for phosphate. I should have, I guess. But, I still had, good results. But now it's, we've got the technology, and the ICP testing is a lot more affordable, and there's more science behind it. And, it can get too complex. I'll admit that sometimes I go down rabbit holes where I might complicate things too much. And I think it's always helpful to try to take a step back and make things more simplistic and not try to do too much and not have too many variables in play.
And that's another aspect. That we can just put in as for the polyp booster. That was the idea behind the polyp booster, was that there's company that was having a lot of different bottles to sell, and German companies were very popular at that in 10, 15 years, still popular today. Zeovit is a great product. They have good stuff. They have a good concept, right? But we wanted to have a product that would be easy to dose and that would include not everything that these guys offer, but almost 90% of everything that can be obtained with one bottle. So polyp booster is a bit of this, and colors 200% in acids also, but in part in the case of amino acids. Trace elements, you're gonna find it a little bit everywhere in all foods too, right? It's like for humans, if we eat a balanced diet, we're going to get all the nutrients we need. But when in the closed environment and with the different corals you're going to have, some elements can get deprived and you need to replenish them. So it's absolutely something necessary. But, I always like to think that there's something simpler to do to get a good result as well.
Yeah. Let's take another question from the audience. And this is from the... one of the viewers, I can't pronounce the username. Phil, can you explain about Polyblab Color?
Polyblab Color is a broad spectrum of different amino acids in their pure form, right? And people are always surprised when they read instruction and they go like, what? A drop per 15 gallons? Are you crazy? No, it actually is enough, right? And these are going to be added to a tank, and they're going to be able to go over, and coral's going to be able to grab them in the water column themselves. So it's a broad spectrums of amino acids that are actually made for the developments of cellular life or growth of cellular bodies or components, right? So we know that corals lives with zooantellas and commensalism together with the zooantellas and themselves, and they create a beneficial environment for both. We know also, and that's more and more seen now in the last research we saw in the last years, where around corals there's a microbiome. There's a lot of different organisms that are part of better growth, part of the health of the corals, and that are not necessarily the same from corals to corals, right? So it comes to a point where it's important to supply all the environment and all the living things around the corals and the coral itself with proper amino acids and proper material to be able to strive and to do their job. So that's what Colors is all about. Colors is also going to provide amino acids that's going to create a little bit more of coloration. We can talk about trace elements, but in this case, amino acids are not trace elements.
Yeah. Yep.
That's what I would say.
What about live feeds like phytoplankton, rotifers? You know, a lot of people, I've tried live phyto, and I didn't really notice a difference in terms of my corals, in terms of growth and coloration. I did notice a difference in terms of the pod population, you know, growing. Is are live feeds like phyto, is that something that could potentially enhance the use of reefroids and, you know, using that in conjunction with reefroids? Or what are your thoughts in terms of live feeds? You guys don't have live feeds, but...
We did have live feeds with in partnership with a company in Florida. And we wanted tiger pods. We were having a tiger pods and another types of pods. But we wanted to... it was into a way because we think that live feeds is very important in the aquarium, again, for all the different animals that lives in there. Pods gonna feed the pods gonna feed on a carnivorous diet, yep. Right? They're gonna feed on reefroids. The size of the particle is so small. We're talking about 250 microns and down. So they're gonna be able to take some of these. Is it going to increase the population? I can't claim this, but if in an environment where the resources are available most of the time, you're going to be able to have a bigger population or reproduce a bigger population of pods and phytoplankton. We did have talk with a nice company of livestock to feed their pods with refroid. So having pods with refroid inside, but that doesn't fly because they digest it, right? So it's kind of a little bit ridiculous.
Can you over-fertilize a tank if you're feeding it too much? I mean, you mentioned that, you know, we talked about if you get too heavy-handed with the refroids or another food, you know, can over-fertilization, I mean, is that just simply what we were talking about? If you're starting to see algae, then back off a little bit.
You're gonna have a problem if you overfeed. That's for sure. Overfeeding is a problem for any type of products around here, around the in the market. You're gonna create waste, so to speak, and not waste in the fact where you keep your phosphate level at that healthy level for your bioload, and healthy level of nitrate for your bioload. If you go and you make those phosphate and nitrate more available, it's clear that any organism is opportunistic in nature. So they're going to get there and they're going to be able to grow. So if you don't have any control over that, clearly you can over-fertilize your tank unless you use a product that has no phosphate and no nitrate, which is in a food but give you no result.
It's not a quality food.
We've
covered that.
Yes.
Gene Plotkin, I was going to ask this question, Gene. Do you prefer to target or broadcast feed with reefroids? I guess it depends on the corals, but...
It depends on the coral, and it also depends on the, we were talking about fish nipping, right? Sometimes you might want to protect a coral and target feed it under a certain kind of a bubble or enclosed environment, just for the sake that the crabs and the shrimps not going to go over and take the mucus and whatnot to help him grow and get more adapted to his environment. What do I prefer? I love target feedings for feeding videos. But I think broadcast feeding is also is something that. But even when you do target feeding, at one point there's going to be leftovers over going around. But broadcast feeding will give you as much better result. I mean, target feeding is painstaking, right? It's
yeah, I've never done that. Well, maybe I used to do it like years ago, but I broadcast.
If you see. It's because the benefits, you know, your coral's not doing great and he's a largemouth polyps, right? You might have benefits in to target feeding them because you're going to see that they're going to react quickly and they're going to ingest food, can almost see it. Smallmouth, you know, corals or the one with tentacles or the filter feeder corals, there's no need to target feed them. They're going to take the water column into. Like I said, these animals have been unhurt way longer than we are.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
We can't really change that. As a matter of, they're well adapted to their environment. They're already in the closed environment, and they are able to do the job. I don't see any benefits of target feeding versus broadcast feeding. Other than if you have fish that's going to nip the coral out from polyps or it's going to take advantage to attack corals, then that might be a good idea.
Let me ask you a question about dosing bacteria. You guys have some bacteria dosing products. What are the instances where you should consider dosing bacteria or promoting, you know, to the tank or promoting the growth of bacteria in your tank?
Each and every time that you feel that your nitrate phosphate are getting out of hands or getting too high, out of your balance as usual. There's two solutions. You either reduce your feeding from fish, coral food, whatever, you reduce that. And then you use a bacterial product or Genesis, for instance, to make sure that you can create an environment where biofilms can develop over feeding from these nitrate and phosphate. That's the first thing. You use a bacterial product like Genesis if you use Medic, for instance, because you're going to unbalance other beneficial bacteria as well into those kind of situations. So after a ride 10 days, you add bacterial products to keep this microbiome healthy. And you do it if you need to use Medic for another 20 days, for another 10 days, for a total of 20 days. You need to make sure that you keep your microbiome and your bacterial environment properly populated, replenished, exactly, because it's exactly like we talked earlier on. If your beneficial bacteria goes away, you leave space, and the universe hates space. There's no space that's empty. Space is empty, but there's dark matter. You know, something unhurt's gonna take that spot. And you don't want to have an opportunity for bad actors to take that space and just grow algae and grow something you don't want. So that's why those bacterial products like Genesis will give into your aquarium the ability to populate the space and make good use of it instead of making something that's going to be a pain in.
There's a lot of opportunistic critters that populate our reef tanks, right?
Everywhere. They're all over the planet. It's an invasion.
I'm kind of jumping around here a little bit, man, but clams. Do you have any thoughts in terms of clam nutrition? You know, it seems like they're just, I've talked about this before on this show, that they're just sometimes very tough to keep, and I've heard different theories about that in terms of a lot of the clams that are coming in are very small. They need to be fed a lot. Do you have any thoughts in terms of clams and you know, best practices in terms of how to keep them alive?
They're filter feeders to start with, right? So we think reef fluid is one of the best product that can be used to feed them, as a matter of fact.
Target feed or?
I would, well, when you have clams, most of the time, fish are not going to go around them because they're going to be afraid to just get clamped, actually. Right. So it can be target feeding. That would be efficient. But clams are very sensible to phosphate level. They're really sensible. Most of the problems people experience with clams is don't really have to do much with feeding them. I think it's a light issue. Lighting issue. And it's either that they're too far away or they're too close, right? And now you're going to say, you're going away from feeding them to feeding, I think, is the easy part for clams. But flow and lighting, because the clams is not going to have, they're going to suck in water and they're going to push it out. They're not going to have a mucus. They're not going to have tentacles. They're not going to have a way to actually ingest food. Food needs to come to them. So flow, light, super important. And then whatever food's getting to that direction, they're going to take, right? But as a quality food producer, we think refrow it would be one of the best things that they can get into their way to feed. But yeah, clams, it's not good for my business, but clams, I think, and it's an opinion, maybe a fact, but more likely light and flow are very important. And yes, of course, phosphate level can be a problem. Calcium, if you have a good salt, you need high calcium and magnesium because they need to create themselves and grow. But it's another type of husbandry and on the matter.
Gene Plotkin says, never had issues with clams when I was running metal halides. Well, there you go, lighting. You know, it's different.
I didn't say it.
Yeah, now we can get on the whole metal halide LED debate here.
Oh, no, I have to go. Sorry.
Exit stage left.
Exit stage. But, I mean, that's a comment, but there's a lot of good advantage with LED, a lot. I mean, Allied was great. If you were not breaking the bulbs and throwing $200 into the garbage, that was one thing. And the second thing, you needed a water cooler because it was eating water too much, right? So, and your room was so warm and humid. There's advantage and disadvantage, but for clam, lightning is one of the things that it's difficult to go away with.
All right, so Phil, I want to ask you one last question, and I did some deep research, you know, for this interview, and I found back in 2017 that you were a backer for a research project then that investigated whether corals, you know, can acclimate and adapt to a warming ocean, which is very interesting. Back in 2017, you were already thinking about that stuff. How can you share with us how that study turned out? Any learnings?
Well, it ain't good news, right?
It's not good news, okay.
They
didn't adapt well, I guess is what you're telling us.
It depends on the type of corals, but most the more simplest form or those who are well adapted, when they get into a warmer condition, have a lot of difficulties to actually go through those warm phases, because oceans doesn't stay warm, right? It's an average, so they're gonna do well with a temperature which is the normal temperature which they have been in for billions of years. Again, I say it again, that change for so many reasons that we're not going to discuss here. And clearly, there might have many, many losses before another. How can I say this? The process of evolution is too slow for the rate in which the ocean's warming at this moment. I don't want to be alarmist. I don't want to create some kind of crazy stories, but ocean acidification is one problem. And warming temperatures of the ocean is another problem. And it's a problem that's pretty actual right now. I mean, this monster that's going to hit Florida that started in the Gulf of Mexico and travels, you know, I mean, where's all that moistures and that temperatures and that heat has to come from somewhere, and it's come from the ocean. So that being said, we can't give up on this. So we worked with several coral restoration programs in Florida that they are actually now working on getting corals out of the water for the summer period where the water is way too warm. Keep them in labs. They keep them there. We supply the food or the refroids for this. They study them. They try to see what they can do to keep them more steady, right? More resistant to heat. And then when the temperature of the water comes to a normal level, they put it back there, right? But it's very time consuming, and you cannot save the planet, and you're not going to save corals by doing this. But it's essential to know if we ever can find a trend or a way where those corals are going to show us a sign that they can adapt.
Yeah,
I don't think we are, as human, having a technology that what we're strong enough to just save all the corals, unless they tell us, listen, we're getting there. They're just going to tell us.
Yeah,
not going to get a motive out there. Yeah. But they're going to tell us what's going to happen, but it's not like we're going to say from the next day, we made a research and we know why coral is dying because oceans are getting warmer. Okay, so that's the result. Is there a solution? There is a solution, but and that's why I say it's not something that is good news, but if we give up, then we just can go back home and just, you know, we're going to look at the old National Geography videos in the future.
Yeah. All right. Last question from the audience. You might've touched on this already, Phil, but why don't you just refresh our memories. Alyssa is asking, so I heard new product is coming. Any new products on the horizon?
Yeah. Yeah, we have the ceramic gelatinous rock that actually you can put into your tank in a neat way, clean them easier. We have a special rack that they're going to come in with, or that customers going to be able to buy to either put them neatly into their aquarium or create a situation of low flow to create an anaerobic conditions to grow different types of bacteria. So that's what we have new in stock for the coming years. We're also working, but that is really, we're not close to it. We would really like to develop the product or pass that would be something that you can put next to a frag and have it to and have this pass to create this microbiome around it. But it's more than a concept, but we're not there yet.
Yeah.
We need to show it. We need to show it works. We just don't want to have a product that is useless.
I hear you, man. So Phil, man, thank you so much for spending this quality time with us. It was very educational. Just tell the folks in terms of where they can find your products. Many different places, right? Even on my website now.
Oh, there is. Yeah, you're one of those our sellers. There's plentiful of different location. You can get it online. Also in our brick and mortar stores that have been with us for years. We recently, and that might be something different, but we recently worked on getting Amazon more specific about the product we sell, because there's some listings we're not happy about, so that we're taking control of it. Thanksgiving's coming. Guys, this is a strange Thanksgiving this year. You guys wait for this Thanksgiving. There's going to be a lot of good things happening, but companies are going to have to bring more stock, which they start to do now, but a little bit later. So there's going to be good deals in the coming weeks, and Refroids and Polyplab were pretty much all over the place. Go check us on Facebook, on Instagram, starting on TikTok now, or website. We're pretty much everywhere type Polyp Lab on Google and going to see videos and all the places where you can get your stuff.
Cool. And you guys do a lot of trade shows. Maybe I'll see you at an upcoming trade show. I'm probably going to be going to restock in March.
That would be good, but you're close enough so I can drive.
Yeah, there we go. That's true. We are close enough, man.
We'll see. Hey, thank you very much, everybody. Thanks for having me, Keith. And I really enjoyed it. I felt anxiety just for starting, but now I feel better.
Yeah, man. That was a lot of fun, Phil. Really appreciate it. So thanks to Phil. I also want to thank my sponsors one more time, Polar Reef. Make sure to check out Polar Reef's new YouTube video that drops this Friday, where the infamous Purple Queen Anthias is the star of the show. This incredibly difficult species is hardly seen in an aquarium because they usually die quickly. Polar Reef tackles a proper quarantine process and is finally successful. Make sure to subscribe to their YouTube channel at Polar Reef for video drop notifications. Champion Lighting and Supply, besides being a place for hobbyists to purchase saltwater aquarium supplies online, Champion Lighting is also a wholesale distributor for many popular brands. If you own an aquarium store or an aquarium service company, contact Champion Lighting through the website at championlighting.com to set up a wholesale account. And finally, Fauna Marine. I do use the Fauna Marine Reef ICP Total Test Kit, which gives a quick, accurate, and easy overview of over 90 water values in reef aquariums. From macro elements to trace elements and pollutants, you get a complete overview with corresponding dosage and action recommendations. A big thank you to Paul, who is the moderator as well as the president of the Boston Reefer Society. Please join and support your local reefing clubs. They are so important to this hobby. Also want to let you know that all episodes of Rapid with the Reef Bum are available as podcasts on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and Amazon. My next Rapid with the Reef Bum live stream will be next Tuesday, October 15th at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. My guest will be Bill Bramucci from Epic Aquaculture. You can check out the full upcoming schedule of guests on reefbum.com under the YouTube section. Until next time, be safe and be well. Later.